It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mont Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Good afternoon, Interior Alaska. Welcome to another episode of Alaska Tracks. With this program, we listen to excerpts of interviews I've recorded with veteran outdoorsmen and women. I focus on pilots and hunters and biologists and trappers. I began this project in 1997 and now have over 200 recordings in the collection. For today's episode, we will be hearing from Bill Fickus. Bill and his family lived on a homestead north of Bettles. They called it Crevice Creek Ranch. Bill guided big game hunters in the fall and then trapped in the winter. He's got wonderful stories to share. In this first segment, Bill tells about hunters he guided for doll sheep, moose, and grizzly bears. Let's listen in.
Anyhow, in 63, we moved up here. We had two kids then. Matt was about 18 months old and Debbie was about 14 months older. And I was mining on the creek, just a small operation, just a little gas cap. And then I trapped in the wintertime. In about 65, I started getting interested in taking hunters out. I was not a guide, I was just more of a transporter. We'd put them up room and board, and then I'd charge them so much for flying. Bill Griffith came up here and gave me my writ for guiding. I believe that was in late 66, and so I started guiding after that. And so I'd do my little in the summertime, guiding late summer, early fall, and then I'd trap in the winter. At that time, of course, the furs weren't paying as good as. And our primary fur was link. Link, wolf, and wolverine. Martin was south to here. If I picked up 40 martin a year, I was doing good. And now a lot of these guys trapping out of Bettles, they'd get 100 and some martin, no problem, but no link, and very few wolves. I'd get probably a half a dozen wolves, three or four wolverine, and I'm talking about in the season. Best year was 35 link. When link, we're going for $600. That was a good season.
And you said you'd pick up a half a dozen?
Yeah, it's usually a half a dozen.
In those years when the fur prices were really up, that must have been a bonus for you.
Yeah, it was. My son Matt, we had the champion, he had a little foot line right up here by Sheep Creek. When he'd do it with the airplane, he'd have a 2 mile line this way and about 1 mile line this way, and here was a lake. He checked the line with the airplane, and if he had any animals in it, he'd land, he'd walk in and get them. He got 35 link in a little over 2 weeks. The best link he sold for $1,000 in Canada. Most of my trapping I did with dogs. 75 was the first snow machine we ever got. So from 63 until 75, that's 12 years, I trapped with dogs.
You like the dogs better?
You got to feed them all summer long, but yeah, they're so much better. Wolves will follow the trails. One thing about it, I had 180 traps set out, and if you get a big snow with the wind, a lot of times you don't know where to set your traps, but those dogs will stop every time, and then you have to, I got a trap here somewhere.
Do you ever have any particular good years or bad years? Years when you were hoping to get a bunch of fur and things just struck out?
A lot of times the weather has a lot to do with some big snows and real cold weather where you can't get out and the animals don't move. But I got better as time went by. I had longer trap lines. I had one that went south here and then one went up into the park. That was a 2-day line. And then I'd let the dogs rest up for 1 day at home and then I'd maybe get four for a day. And then I'd go and check this line.
Was this a 1 day or a 2 day north of here?
It depended. If you had a good trail, you could do it in 1 day. It was a 60-mile line.
Did you have a cabin somewhere halfway around?
Just a tent. I had a good trap line. This one south, that was good for maybe one or two lake a season, and maybe a wolf. I don't think I ever picked a wolverine up down here. And then the rest would be martin. And then north of here, a lot of lake, wolverine and wolves. But I never got a martin north of here.
Would you sell all of your furs, or would you save some of them and use them for your own purposes?
Maybe a poor wolf a little save for making rough.
So did you trap beaver around here?
Yeah. Now, beaver is a lot of work for the amount of money you get for them.
Would you trap them through the ice?
Yeah.
How much ice would you expect to get around here?
Well, 4 feet average. They're later in the year. Beavers trapping started February or March.
How far do they extend? Do they go all the way up to the divide north of here?
There's some dams as far as Hunt Fork Lake, so they'd be about 40 miles north of here. They run out of everything but willow, and they like their birch and their poplar, and there's a lot of that down here.
And I imagine before you actually got into the guiding operation, you've done a lot of hunting on your own.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What's your favorite big game animal?
Well, I love them. I don't like to shoot them, but the best one is grizzly. Because it's kind of a challenge. Of course, sheep would be my next one. And a moose, that's just a lot of work. Back them out, you
know. Okay, so you mentioned grizzly bears. Can you remember a particular hunt that really sticks in your mind?
I've had to kill charging bears. I had a fellow, he was a stockbroker. Him and a good friend of mine, Clay Binninger, he hunted up here 3 times with me. He got black bear, wolf, 2 grizzlies, 2 sheep, and moose. Over a period of time, different hunts. This guy wanted this small bear, and I said, that bear isn't bigger than 6 foot. And always said, I don't care, I want that bear. So anyhow, I was taking movies of him. This would be before I had horses, so this would be about 68, 69. Anyhow, I seen he hit this bear. I could see the bear lurch. And then he dropped down into a little creek bed. This was on the North Fork. So we kept on looking for him, and I'd keep checking it. Well, to make a long story short, I get about here to that cooler, clump of brush right here, and I just seen him go like a cat does when they get ready to spring. He's waiting for me right there. If I would have took one more step to clear that bush, because he could have went anytime he wanted, but he was waiting. I knew he was getting ready to spring. Of course, I had my gun ready, and I called the hunter, and I said, if you want to shoot, you get over here right now. So then he came over, and then when he shot, I shot. It was too close to take a chance. Turned out he was hit, just a flesh wound in the arm. I've had 5 bears that I had to kill. I wasn't even hunting them. And one was a sow with a 2-year-old cub. It was in October. I'm taking a fellow up to show him a creek up here. And I had a Springer Spaniel, and he was walking in front of us. And this is on the Allen River right here. And we spot this one bear. It was a young one. Stood up and jumped over a bank. We turned around, and what he did, he went over there and picked up his mother, and they instantly charged. It didn't look like it was bluffing. They were about from here to the barrel when we spotted him, they started to charge.
So 50 yards or so.
Yeah, well, I nailed him before he got halfway, and nailed her, and knocked her down, and she got up sideways. This fellow, named Joe Krusak, he shot her through the shoulders. Because a few years before that, had a male, a nice bear, he was close to 8 foot. And he'd been recently fighting. He was just apparently in a bad mood. We were coming off the sheep hunt, and we're about this deep in the Allen River wading across. We spotted the bear from the top of the hill. The bear caught our scent, because we were both smokers, and our scent was one right down there. He got a glimpse of the bear. He ran away, and I thought, well, we spooked him. So we started to cross. Well, he did. He ran down, and he was waiting for us down the creek about 50 or 75 yards down. Well, we started crossing earlier. There was only one good place to cross the river right there. Get midstream, and somebody told me to turn around. Turned around, here this bear just coming off. And here's something funny. You hear about which way an animal will fall. This bear was on a full charge, and it was a well-placed gut shot. I just missed the brisket and hit him right here and put him right back up on the bank again. Of course, this is almost muzzle velocity. It was only 7 yards. And the whole bullet was spent, never went through him. And at that range, it just stopped his forward charge, just knocked him right back. He got up like he was never hit. Didn't break no bones or anything. And then we had to shoot him a second time. Then back here about 7 or 8 years ago, coming from mining up the creek with a 3-wheeler, and spotted a bear and a 2-year-old cub. And they instantly charged. And they were about 90, 100 yards. There was an S-turn on the trail, just on this creek here. Just before I make a left turn, I see this bear stand up. It dropped down, then 2 of them stood up and instantly charged. Well, the cub was just about the same size as the sow. She was a small bear. She was, well, maybe 6.5 feet. So they instantly charged. So I hollered. They never slowed down. So I took the .44 and I threw a shot over its head, threw a shot in front of them, and I only used to carry 5 rounds in the gun. So I right away, 3 bullets, you know, 2 bears, not enough. So I chucked the .44, put the pedal of metal on the 3-wheeler, took off, and she caught me on the right-hand corner and just drew blood right here on my cheek.
Somewhere. With a claw?
And took my hand off. It was kind of funny. My wife was floating down, and I dropped them off about 20 miles upriver. She had a German hunter, and they were floating down. Of course, they'd been camped up there, and then they were supposed to be here at this certain time. That's the reason I was coming home. I was going to go down and pick them up. They weren't here, so I started down the trail. I got halfway down there walking up, and she asked me what happened. I said, what do you mean? She said, you got blood all over your face. I never even knew the bear touched me. Yes. And then 2 days later, there was a fellow, Bill Toolbuck. He's from Bettles. And we had that bunkhouse. It was up where we were mining. And we always have somebody spend a night up there because the bears like to break in. But two nights later, it was his turn to go up the creek. He was back in 20 minutes. He said, she's up there again. So we went up there and I took the odd six with me this time. Sure enough, we get about 100 yards away from her and she starts stalking. Didn't run, she was just stalking. I said, well, maybe she's just after the three-wheeler. I said, let's get off, we'll walk. So we got off the three-wheeler, walked about 30 feet over this way. She just changed her compass heading. She started right coming towards us. Well, when she got about 30 feet away, I said, she drew blood on me 2 days ago. I said, that's close enough. So we busted her. None of these bears were molested at all. We've had close calls right here where I outbluffed the bears. We had three bear last year right here in the yard. One was a small, about a 6.5 foot boar. And then a huge black bear right in the lawn. That was a beautiful trophy black bear. Then a grizzly on the other side. It was 12:45 in the morning. I fell asleep on the couch watching TV and Lil woke me up. She said, darling, there's a big bear across the runway. What a way to wake up. I got up, looked out the window, and here the bear just got up. He was rolling and he shook himself off and he starts across the airstrip. And this was a big bear. So I grabbed the O6. And like I said, I don't like to shoot bears. I love the darn things. As I opened the door, the dog was sleeping on the porch here. The wind was just slowly sloughing across the runway. There's maybe about 2 knots or so. When I opened that door, those dogs caught the scent of that bear and they took off. They ran him right out of the country. I measured his track in the dirt. The front pad was 8.5 inches across. 8.5 inch front pad is between an 8.5 and a 9.5 foot bear. And that's a good rule of thumb. It's never less. But that's just some of the bear stories. Most bear hunters I had in one season was three. The first year I guided, took three bears, and three of them made the buck green. One was a big one. He scored 9th for world record, taken by Paul McGee. Took two moose and made the record book that year.
Like I said, this guy knows how to really tell a story. Let's take a break here for a word from our sponsors. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting this show. I hope that you will patronize these businesses and thank them personally for keeping us on the air. Now back to our interview with Bill Fickus.
You said your other favorite was sheep. Tell us about your favorite sheep hunt.
Every sheep hunt I had with the horses was my favorite because I did enough of packing. And once those horses learn where you're going, after they go half a mile, they'll know where they're going. Just take a loose dally on the reins so in case she stumbles and just sit back there and smoke a cigarette or shoot the breeze. And of course, when I had the horses, my wife would hunt with me. And then the kids would wrangle. The whole family would be involved. A sheep hunt on horses usually takes 3 days. One day in, one day on the hunt, and then one day back if he don't score. If he scores, we'll spend a day in camp and come back like on the 4th or 5th. But I usually book them for 7 days. If you get rained out or we've had wolves chase our sheep off in front of us, we'd have a black bear chase sheep off, so you'd lose out on the hunt. I've had hunters miss. But most of the hunters are good shots. Maybe 9 out of 10 times you'll get your animal on the first hunt. But then if you don't, you come back in, resupply, and go back out somewhere else. I've never had one hunter ever go home stumped.
On the sheep, can you remember a particular hunt where a guy got a real nice one or made a real good shot or anything special?
70 was my first year I started guiding with horses. Had a fellow hunt up the Allen. It was about 12 miles into camp. We made the stock. The first day after we got into camp, right from our campsite, we spotted the sheep were right up there. Turned out while we were making the stock, the sheep decided to cross and come down the camp. We're right through the camp. They walked right through the horses and then went across the river and up the other side. So we made this wasted hunt. The sheep were less than a mile away. They're just right up the side of the hill. So we just got on the horses, rode them bareback across, and then the kids brought the horses back and we went on the hunt. So we start out on them. We're making the stock. I'm watching the skyline all the while, make sure the sheep don't go over the top. Well, to make a long story short, it's a good berry hill. I come up on the sheep. The sheep's about, well, maybe less than 50 yards. It's laying down. All I can see was the top of the horns. And he's looking down across the valley. So I go like this here to my hunter.
Waving him on.
Yeah. And I'm pointing at the sheep, going like this. And I look back, and they're 50 yards behind me picking berries. They get up, and they start running to catch up to me, and that spooked the sheep. So the sheep starts to run. It ran for about 100 yards. So it would be about 150 yards away. course, he just ran 50 yards to catch up, and he said, I need a rest. Well, I said, there's a rock right there. He goes down the rock, and he misses it. The sheep ran for another 100 yards, stopped to get him missed. He never got that sheep. No, this is the second hill run. Then we took him up to Bar Creek. Finally got a sheep on Bar Creek. But I took him on three different mountains to get a sheep. First mount was an accident. The sheep left the hill, just decided to move to change pasture. But the second one, he should have got that one. And then the third one, that was a bugger. When he shot that sheep, the sheep slid, went down the mossy side where the sun hardly ever hits, and just enough of moisture where all the rocks smooth. So sheep landed one of like a big bathtub, about maybe about 6 by 10 feet, just in about that much water, slid down in there. So we lowered Lil down on a rope. Because it was just too slick to pack that sheep out. But then we pulled the sheep up, and then later on tossed the rope and pulled her up.
Yeah. So the sheep came before your wife.
Yeah. But I made a deal with them after that. They were picking berries on the first time. Well, the sheep left that hill. But maybe if they weren't picking berries, we'd have got there sooner, and maybe we would have got them on the first hill. The second hill was definitely picking berries. So when we went on the third hunt, I said to Paul, first time you stop to pick a berry, our hunt's over. Because I didn't want to waste no more time. I had an attorney. We had finished our hunt, and I had this one horse that would just blow up for no reason at all, and he'd buck like crazy. And I was afraid to put a client on him. I had a client on him one time, he threw him off, and that's it. So I needed to have one of the kids ride him, or I'd ride him. I was just trying to work him out a little bit, going up and down the runway, and all of a sudden, on the way back, coming full tilt, he goes to pitch him. And I wasn't expecting, he just picked me up, and I broke my pelvic bone. Ryan Postweiler was my next hunter that came in, like the following day. He got his moose, he got his caribou, and his bear, and I said, Randy, I can't take you on the mountain for sheep. But I said, why don't you come back next year for a free sheep hunt? Well, it cost him a license, cost him his playing fare, but he got a hunt for nothing. The biggest sheep we got was taken by Matt Bird. I forget what that scored, but it was about a third of the way up in the book. There were 42 and a half, both even. He was 14 and 5/8 pace and heavy all the way through. We've gotten rams at 40 inches, 42 inches, but that's when Harris scored the best. It was just so heavy. The hunt before that, but the one guy we called Great Day in the Morning, and Grover Bradley. Grover had hunted sheep before, and Great Day in the Morning been on three different sheep hunts and got skunked every time. On the way in, we were coming up over the bank. It was so steep, we wouldn't even grow vegetation. And usually, I like the switchback going up. Well, my horse decided to start lunging up, and she just started lunging up straight up the hill. Well, you got to lean forward. And I had a Texas rope and saddle. It's got a long horn on it, and caught me underneath the brisket here. Popped that cartilage out. And I just could hardly breathe. And that night he's telling jokes about his different hunts he was on. And I'm laughing at him. But anyway, we go to the hunt the next day. He decided he'd have the first shot. So he had a one-shot kill. And Grover, even though he hunted before, not with me, but he hunted before, the sheep didn't know where we were. We were about 75 yards away from him. And just one shot, and if you don't move, they'll bolt for a little bit and they'll stop. He should have moved. As soon as they started to bolt, Grover started shooting. And he missed on a running shot. And then they took off. Well, about 250, 300 yards away, one big ram stopped. Now, he'd been shooting all along at this running ram. Anyhow, the ram stopped, and he nailed it, and the ram went down. I mean, that sheep just dropped. So we're shaking hands a little, except she said, hey, your sheep is getting away. We hunted for that sheep, went miles. Wasn't leaving enough of blood for some reason. I just didn't any main arteries or anything like that. We got a different sheep, but then I wanted to find that crippled sheep. So then we came back and took the champ, started looking around, spotted it. It was in a cave, and the cave was just about so big, but it opened up to about 30 feet wide, about 60 feet long. All this moss, and never see sunlight. All the sheep beds in there. When the weather's bad, the sheep go in there, just like a huge apartment house. And we went up into that cave to look for that sheep, and it was gone. The next hunter was Matt Burt, and sure enough, we spot that ram. He was feeding with about six other rams, and that's where he got that big ram. And that sheep, he was grazing and everything, but he'd have probably winter killed. Because this was like 2 weeks later, and that was still just nothing but a bare wound. Didn't break his neck or nothing, because when we caped him out, the wound was already healed where it went in. It entered just about an inch from center line. But he must have just had his head turned enough where it went in here and came out here. The most I'd ever take out was six. And usually I'd only take on four. Because that way, you take the best rams out, you don't overhunt. When I was hunting with horses, I'd go as high as six, because I had more area. But when I was hunting on foot, four was my limit. And with the horses, see, we'd hunt 10, 15 miles down this way and head water to the Timber Creek. We'd hunt Rock Creek and 60 miles. We'd hunt both sides of the Allen River way up. And then once in a while, we'd hunt up Garvis Creek. That's more of a Lamanu area. So you talk 15 miles this way, 50 miles. We're talking a 30-mile radius. That's not going to hurt to take six sheep. When I was hunting out of here and out of a riverboat, I figured four was plenty. All the years, they never advertised. It was just in the guide register at Juneau. Hunters, they'd tell their buddies. But see, I used to have enough hunters where I seldom ever had to go out and shoot anything myself.
They'd leave you a little bit.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure with four kids, it never went to waste.
No. And then in the late 70s, a fellow by the name of Frank Obis, Jet Set Tours out of Germany, he came up and he said he'd keep me in German hunters. Well, Germans like to hunt mostly caribou and moose. They like bighorn. And I'd be hunting clear in the second moose season. And it got pretty tough. I made good money, but it got pretty tough because I always worked alone.
Tell us a couple of moose stories.
Clay Bittinger took out the biggest moose as far as whip goes.
And what was that?
74. This one we got hanging in the living room is about 69 and a half now. So I think it was about 70 and a half when I hung it up there. They'll still shrink a tad every year. That was a meat moose we took off the end of the runway, this one in here, and that's worth 236. This same Clay Bittinger I was talking about, these ones took the biggest moose. That moose didn't score high because it had no points. Wide, yeah, but just moved palms. That was his first hunt I was on with him. I landed in a barn down the river. It was real windy, and we're in these big tall trees, and this moose was bedded down in there. Hard to find it. When we walked up to within 20 feet of that moose, the moose was sound asleep. Clay had a 340 Weatherby. He was always gun-shy with that. He'd always get a hickey when he'd shoot.
Oh, right above the eye.
Yeah. Anyhow, he shoots and misses this moose. Now, it's point-blank range almost. Misses it. He's going to get in the lake, and he shoots again, and he wounds it. Then the moose goes in the lake. I forget where he hit him, but it wasn't a vital shot. So the moose was in about 4 or 5 feet of water. He shot like 5 or 6 times and had to go back to the airplane and get more ammo. So it took me 30 minutes to go back and forth. So I went out into the lake. I just sprayed bullets right in front of the moose's nose with my .06. And God would come back into the shoreline. And when he got back to the shoreline, then Clay busted him. Jack Seiberling had him on a moose hunt. And he wanted that moose real bad. I said, okay, but don't shoot him in the water. We left the moose spot us. The moose was on the far side of the lake. We're shooting a good 250 yards across. So anyhow, the moose gets about 10 feet from the water. I said, okay, he can shoot him now. Gets a perfect heart lung shot, beautiful shot. What happens? The moose backpedals like this, goes over backwards, lands right in the lake again. So I had to go to the airplane, get a bunch of rope, had to lasso him and pull him in.
You end up butchering him in the lake?
No, we got a Mexican windlass, took a couple of trees and then cut a pole, left one good branch on it, so he cranked, and then put the rope on there and just cranked him out.
Well, how about caribou? You said that they used to be so numerous.
Well, Riney Post, a fellow I told him to come back next year for sheep. When I was here in the North Fork, there'd be bands of anywhere from 50 to 300 or 400, and they're all migrating south. Sometimes the bulls weren't even with the cows yet. They'd be right in the same general area, but it was like maybe 2 weeks before the rut. I said, what we'll do? I said, we'll just land on a bar ahead of them. We'll let them walk up on us, because that's usually how it works. Well, it took us 3 or 4 different gravel bar landings. So after the whole day trying to get one caribou, come back. I used to have a pasture for the horses. The following day, here comes about, must have been 1,500, maybe 2,000 caribou. Most all bulls, they're bedding down outside the fence because they just didn't understand that fence and they'd come up to it and get poked. So here's Randy out there taking pictures of these caribou, all kinds of them, looking like a big cattle ranch. And here's the horses inside their pasture. Here's a caribou out here, and he's out there taking pictures of them. And the same guy, Randy, he got his moose right at the mouth of the North Fork of Kaiko, just about 15 miles north of Bettles. And after he took his picture, he said, now I just wish you could get up and walk away. As to me, too, I wouldn't have to pack because I had that bad back. You know, I had to pack everything over my shoulder. And, of course, caribou, they used to be so plentiful here. You just went out and shot as many as you needed, and that was it. But actually, the caribou for years now haven't come through like they used to. They used to come through by the hundreds of thousands. Each side of the hills in the fall time, they'd be crawling with caribou for days. Mm-hmm. They said the herd was estimated 250,000. I think they were off by a lot on that. I think there was a lot more caribou at that time, in those days, not now. And then the caribou, actually up until the pipeline activity, and I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not, but that year was the last good migration we had here, where they came through like the main herd. When they'd migrate north to Anaktuvik, that would make that right turn, and their calving grounds were out near the coast, but it would be northeast of Anaktuvik. That's right where the haul road started. They didn't realize 2 years later the central Arctic herd had diminished in size tremendously. At the same time, the porcupine herd increased. And I think what happened is split up and they got into the porcupine herd.
That's all for today, but we will have more stories from Bill Fickus next week when we return with another episode of Alaska Tracks. Please join us then.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.